Is the UK racist? A question that seems to be on the mind of many with the discussion and talk and activity surrounding the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's a question that really seems to make a lot of people uncomfortable. Because what I found with this question is that it forces people, especially white people in the UK, to answer a question that for so long they've been in denial about. So when we ask the question, is the UK racist, what do we mean? We're trying to unpack what underpins the social fabric of British society. So I would say, from my own personal experience, is that the racism in the UK is not as overt as it is in the States. And that's not to say that they are no incidences of overt racism. There certainly is, and I myself have been at the receiving end of that on multiple occasions. But what we are saying is that what underpins our institutions and many of the psyche of the British public is a racist one, which I find sometimes to be somewhat even more insidious than the overt expressions of racism that we find in the States. Because with the overt expressions, at least you can challenge it there and challenge it head on. You know, you see it, someone's saying, oh my God, we don't get back to your country, you nigger, or this and that, whatever it may be. And you're like, yep, you're a racist. I can tell you why you're a racist. I feel like the British way is that so much so, and I do believe it's been deliberate, is that the racism is just covert, and we're sold a dream or an image that, you know, well, the progress has been amazing, and you know, we've come so far, and you know, there was something called the British Empire, but let's not think about that. And I feel like it's been deliberate from our schooling system, because I find that we don't tell the truth in our schools. How many of us who went to British schools really understand or know the extent of the British Empire, or the extent of and how deep colonization went? I mean, even before we speak about the British Empire and colonization, many people in the UK don't even know the extent of Britain's involvement in the transatlantic slave trade. When we think of slavery, and this is what we're even taught in school, we're taught from an American perspective. Oh, this is what happened in America. And then we had someone called Abraham Lincoln. Then there was the Civil War. Then there was the, you know, the Reconstruction period, and whatever it may be. And it's very Americanized. And I feel like that's to absolve the UK from the crimes that they perpetrated. So we know for a fact, and even when the slave trade is spoken from the British context and the British involvement, pay attention to how it's spoken about. It's spoken from an angle of altruism. So, for example, we're told that, British people, the British government was involved in slavery. But however, you know, after some time, there was murmurings of abolition, and as almost like as if, you know, again, they came and saved the day. Yes, they were wrong, but they weren't wrong for long. I mean, 200 years, but, you know, cool, fine. They weren't like wrong for long. Yeah. As I like to say. But again, that is deliberate misinformation. Because what you find that the kind of ending of slavery comes in conjunction to the start of the Industrial Revolution. And it wasn't that overnight British people, slave owners, the British government somehow gained a heart on the matter. Not at all. It was literally having slaves no longer benefited the purse of those involved, purely monetary, purely economical. And that's why we can talk again on the kind of intersectionality of white supremacy and capitalism. But that's a whole nother day. And for that, I recommend Dr. Cornel West. So now, in answering the question, is Britain racist? And it's hard to spot the racism, which I've mentioned before. So how can we answer this question then? If it's something that we can't see overtly, how do you answer this question? And for this, I feel like it's important that I defer to one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century, literally. And you might recognize his voice. It's none other than James Baldwin.
I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I know, as Malcolm X once put it, that the most segregated hour in American life is high noon on Sunday. That says a great deal for me about a Christian nation. It means that I can't afford to trust most white Christians and certainly cannot trust the Christian church. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
And there we have it, the amazing intellectual heavyweight, James Baldwin, who instructs us to look, when we're talking about racism, we have to move away from the micro and assess the macro, because there is kind of this interplay between the macro and the micro, meaning that the micro informs the macro and the macro informs the micro. And I feel like in the UK, people of colour, particularly black people, we fall into the trap of saying, okay, well, I'm all right in where I live. I haven't experienced racism where I live. White people or people who of this country have been good to me. Heck, I've even dated some in my past. And all these things that you hear, somehow people believe that this counts as substantive evidence of the UK not being racist. And I find that extremely problematic, because the reality on the ground doesn't seem to correlate to the so-called experiences of many people of colour or many black people. So, for example, we know in the UK, let's do, in the vein of what James Baldwin is talking about, let's do what he said. Let's look at the evidence. So what does the evidence tell us about the UK? It first and foremost tells us that black people are more likely to be stopped and searched. And is this because black people are more somehow inherently prone to crime? Of course not. Is there an issue of criminality amongst a certain demographic of young people in this country? Yes, no one can deny that. This has been spoken about. Is the common denominator or factor for their criminality blackness? No, that's what we disagree with. So when we know that black people are more likely to be stopped and searched, it's a question mark here. Why is that the case? We know damn well if you police the hood the same way you policed Glastonbury Festival, you'll find the same amount of drugs, if not more. The same amount of illegal activity, if not more. And heck, you probably find some politicians' family members and daughters and sons there as well getting involved. Let's not like it's a black thing that this is the reason why these things are happening, why drugs are involved. That's just one case study. We know that black boys, particularly in the UK schooling system, are more likely to be excluded from school. Now, the question is, is it because black boys are somehow inherently more misbehaved than everyone else? Of course not. So what is it about the interaction between interaction between black boys in school and their perceived misbehavior? What's going on here? It's a question mark. And why is it targeted at black boys? Again, it's a question mark that we have to answer. Why is it that black women in the UK are more likely to die during childbirth? Is it because black women just can't handle childbirth, that they're somehow weaker to their white counterparts? Or is there an issue here that the process of childbirth is more taxing on black women because they're not receiving ample care? Which one seems more probable? These are the things that we have to look at when we're talking about institutionalized racism. When we're talking about the heart of a country, that what is a country really is something that is an imagined reality, isn't it? There's not such a thing as a country. Yeah, yes, there's land mass, but the country in an abstract sense is what? Is we give it a reality. So the question is now, what is the reality of the ground of that country? And a country is best expressed through how? Is expressed through its institutions. Because no matter how nice Susan down the road is, she doesn't affect my life. What affects my life are the institutions of this country. And almost at every level of society in the UK in 2020, in the British society, disadvantages or is geared to disadvantage people of colour and particularly black people. I remember there was a survey done that if you have an ethnic sounding name or black sounding name with the same grade, same CV, as in, you know, you achieve the same grade, you're less likely to be admitted to Oxford University. What is that other than institutionalized racism? Targeted racism. And the examples are many. This is just the UK context. I mean, America is the same, but amplified to the nth degree. So now let's look at our recent referendum. Well, not so recent now, but it feels like recent because we're still talking about it and nothing's been achieved. Brexit. First of all, look at the demographics of Brexit. It was older people voted overwhelmingly towards Brexit and younger people voted overwhelmingly against Brexit to remain. What were the reasons cited for why people voted Brexit? The number one reason, which was Lord Ashcroft brings and cites, is that people wanted UK to get back control. Whatever that means, we can dissect it another time. But the second most given reason was immigration and border control. Immigration and border control and migrant fear and fear of refugees, all these racist kind of underpinnings that were fueled by the right-wing press and that were fueled by Nigel Farage during the Brexit campaign. That was the second reason given for this demographic, for the demographic of people who voted to leave, who were overwhelmingly white. Something like 7 out of 10 black people voted to remain. Ethnics voted to remain. Why? A question mark. So now we've seen at a political level, at institutional level, that the evidence suggests, we're past suggestion now, it confirms that the UK is racist at institutional level. What does Brexit show? Brexit shows that at the psyche of people, admittedly, it was only 52% to 48%. So I think there's a much more hope in the UK than there is in America, because we can go talk about America and the numbers in America. But statistically speaking, the psyche of the UK people, the UK public, was exposed. And what was it exposed as? As people who are xenophobic, meaning the fear of the other, a fear that's unfounded. And again, I don't want to play into this kind of binary that if you voted Brexit, you're racist. I absolutely disagree with that. If you voted for Brexit, you may not be a racist. However, every racist voted for Brexit. And if you're not a racist and you voted for Brexit, it meant that you didn't see xenophobic rhetoric as enough as a deterrent from siding with the Brexiteers. And that says a lot about your moral compass. Now let's look briefly at America. Make America great again. What does that mean? It's that same populist language that exists that has caused Brexit in the UK, isn't it? It's that same language of let's go back to an old glory of empire. And let's keep it 100. That, you know, in America, boy, making America great again, just not too long ago, there was slavery. Is that what you mean? In the UK, we're talking about it was colonization and empire. Is that what you mean? Because let's keep it real. When people talk about going back to our glory days, whether that's in the UK context or make America great again in the American context, they sure as hell ain't meaning the time when black people were in that picture. That is the evidence. You see, that is the evidence. In America, 65% of those eligible to vote of white men voted for Trump. 52% of white women voted for Trump. What that meant is him pushing the birther movement, him having racist language, him calling countries S-hole countries, and so many kind of, him using so much racist rhetoric was not enough of a deterrent to deter you from siding with somebody. Oh, but I'm not racist, I vote Trump, I just hated Clinton. Fair enough. But now, after 4 years of him, what does that say about your heart? For me, it's very clear. And again, this is what I'm saying. I'm not interested anymore in what people have to say in terms of like, I'm not a racist. How can I be a racist? My friend was black. My friend at school was black. I married, we got black people in our family, and all this stuff. I'm way past that. I have that, like, for me, it's like I don't really care, you know. And when you show me your actions and what your actions are saying, that's when I'll believe you. That's when we can have a conversation. Because again, I feel like it's beautiful in the sense that we've now in an era where it's not enough for you to just be, to say I'm not racist, but we're in an era where you must be actively anti-racist. And I think that's one of the most powerful shifts that I've seen in our day and age. So yeah, again, thanks for listening. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, Culture Renaissance, Culture with a K. You're listening to the Malcolm Effect podcast with Mamadou. Peace out.